Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
The gyms can be insanely hot, and most of the people in the stands aren't especially tall. But basketball is very big in the Philippines. That circumstance drew Rafe Bartholomew to Manila and various other places in the Philippines, where he played a lot of pickup ball and spent a year with the Alaska Dairy Aces, a.k.a. the Milkmen, in the local pro league. The result? Bartholomew's new book, Pacific Rim's Beer Men Ballin' in Flip-Flops and the Philippines' Unlikely Love Affair with Basketball. When I spoke recently with Rafe Bartholomew, I began our conversation by citing a story which had the government rescheduling a voter registration drive in the Philippines because the drive conflicted with a telecast of the NBA Finals. I asked the author whether it was the glitz of the NBA that accounted for the popularity of basketball half a world away.
Oh, not really, because basketball became so popular in the Philippines before the NBA had any glitz even over here on native soil. Mm-hmm. The American colonial government brought the sport there in 1910 and made it part of the phys ed curriculum in the public school system. It was starting for the islands, and the sport became so popular because at first Filipinos were really, really good at it. They were some of the best players in the world because they had this head start. While everyone else in the world was sort of learning the rules, Filipinos had already internalized them, and it led to a very successful run in the 1936 Olympics, a bronze medal in the 1954 World Championships in basketball, and just domination in Asian basketball tournaments until the mid-60s. So it's really almost homegrown there.
Teams in the Pro League in the Philippines are allowed mm-hmm. to employ a limited number of foreign players, and some of those players have washed out of the NBA for one reason or
sure.
another. You refer to one such player, Billy Ray Bates, who starred in the Philippines during the 80s as, quote, a tragic hero. How did he earn that designation?
Billy Ray Bates is this player who seemed so blessed with basketball skills and talent and athleticism, but who seemed sort of doomed to failure. He came from a part of the Deep South in Mississippi, a tiny town. His father was a sharecropper, and he grew up without plumbing and electricity. The deficits from his early life followed him no matter where he went. Even as high as the NBA, they dragged him down, and they led to bad habits. He became, you know, he struggled with alcohol throughout his entire life. And even though he made it to these great heights in basketball, to the NBA, and then when he eventually ended up in the Philippines, as they called him the Black Superman, he scored 54 points in his first game, had 7 dunks, I think 5 or 6 three-pointers, made 17 out of 25 two-point shots. I mean, it was the local papers were calling it the phantasmagorical, I don't even know if that's a word, debut of Billy Ray Bates. So he reached these heights and is still beloved and remembered in the Philippines as the greatest American player to grace the local game. But at the same time, there was always this lurking denouement for him because he tried to stop drinking. He went to rehab, but he never really got alcohol out of his life. You know, it eventually led to the end of his Philippine career, and it eventually led to him robbing a gas station in the late 90s and spending a few years behind bars for it. He's out now, and I've talked to him and heard he's actually getting his life back together, and I really hope it works out because his story, while very sad, for me is also there's something really inspirational about it, just for how high he climbs sort of despite all odds.
You write that there is some possibility Billy Ray Bates may one day return to the Philippines, I guess to the scene of his former glory, but I'm not sure that would be such a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know that local basketball writers and the PBA would really love to have him back. It would be sort of a publicity coup for them. When you read some of the Where Is He Now stories that local newspapers have written about him, say the Oregonian or the Willamette Week Alternate Weekly, the comments on them are filled with Filipinos writing in about how much they love Billy Ray Bates. Even if the story is about Billy Ray Bates robbed a gas station, it's like it doesn't even register. People just write in and say, we love Billy Ray Bates. He's the best I ever saw. He's amazing. He flies in the air.
You write that the Philippines Basketball Association is, quote, one of the trickiest and most unforgiving leagues in the world for visiting imports, that is, international players. Besides the heat in the gym, which it sounds like it's about 120 degrees on a good night, what makes it so bad and so hard?
Well, the intensity with which Filipinos follow basketball and how passionate they are for the game leads to these really overheated expectations. Guys like Billy Ray Bates and some of the other famous imports in the past, Bobby Parks and Norman Black, these guys averaged 50 points a game throughout entire seasons. So they've raised the expectations to an almost unattainable level for modern players in modern basketball because as the years have gone on, coaching has got a lot more sophisticated out there. The players themselves have become much better in terms of defensive techniques and team double teaming and rotations. I mean, the coach of the team I followed, the Alaska Aces, said that his owners, you know, support the imports that he brings in, but they won't be happy unless he brings in Michael Jordan. I mean, that's nothing less than Jordan counts. So it's a tough place for those guys to play because the whole reason they're playing in the Philippines is because they're not Michael Jordan.
How closely do NBA scouts follow basketball in the Philippines?
Well, the NBA has long since known about Philippine basketball. In the 80s, the PBA would have sort of exchanges. They'd pay to bring NBA players out and do an exhibition game with local players. And it was for a while thought of as the best international league in the world. Now, that's no longer really the case. The EuroLeague in Europe is better now. So to answer your question about NBA scouts, NBA Asia scouts are aware of the Philippines and they keep an eye on the country. Most of the rumors these days about a homegrown Filipino player or a PBA player making the NBA tend to revolve around marketing schemes more than basketball value, I'm sad to say. Usually you hear something like the Clippers or the Golden State Warriors, a team in a market with a large Filipino fan base, would like to add a bench player from the Philippines so they can have Filipino night. A CBA team tried something similar maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and Filipino night was their biggest night of the season. Well, they did it every month, and it was their biggest night every month. So I don't know if the NBA teams would play it up that strongly, but the marketing, the jersey sales, they look at it from that point of view, and they see a lot of good things.
The contemporary heroic U.S. transplant whose career in the Philippines you chronicle from the bench is Rosel Roe Ellis. Tell us a little bit about his career and how he found himself playing for the Alaska Aces, which team, incidentally, has nothing to do with the Alaska that you can see from Russia.
Yeah, nothing at all to do with it. It's actually based on the Alaska Milk Corporation in the Philippines. Throughout the 80s and 90s, when they were called the Alaska Milkmen, it made a little bit more sense.
And they aren't the funniest name in the league. Give us some of the others before you answer
absolutely,
that question.
Sure, absolutely. So it's sort of a marker of prestige in the Philippines if you can afford a PBA team. One of the best is the Pure Foods franchise, which just recently actually changed its name to the Derby Ace Llamados, which is referring to a brand of pig and fighting cock feed. But when Pure Foods was when it played under the Pure Foods name, which was a meat canned meat company, they were the Pure Foods Chunky Giants, the Pure Foods Corned Beef Cowboys, the Pure Foods Tender Juicy Giants.
That's my favorite.
Yeah. The Pure Foods Tender Juicy Hot Dogs. They'll switch it up to promote a new product. One of my favorites is the Santa Lucia Realtors because it's just the most boring, lame name you could almost try to give a basketball team. There's almost no limit to how far you can take it.
But how did anybody ever beat the Juicy Giants?
The Tender Juicy Giants.
Yeah.
Actually, the Tender Juicy Giants won the most recent All-Filipino Conference Championship. No one did beat the Tender Juicy Giants.
All right. Let us get back, however, to Rosel Roe Ellis, because he's the player really that you spend the most time writing about in the book. Tell us a little bit about how he ended up in the Philippines and how he achieved what I read as a terrific success.
Absolutely. Well, Rossell Ellis had a sort of long, winding start to his career where he, he was a celebrated high school player from Seattle, Washington. He played at the same Seattle high school as guys like Nate Robinson and Jamal Crawford, who are currently in the NBA. He was the state player of the year in 1993. But he ended up going to junior college and then a small Division I school where it was sort of hard for him to gain national attention at McNeese State University. He's a classic tweener in basketball terms, which means he's too short for his position. He plays some sort of a hybrid small forward, power forward position. So he didn't get drafted and ended up playing in the minor leagues in a league now defunct called the IBA, the International Basketball Association, where he was one of the league's top scorers. He was starting to gain some attention from NBA scouts who thought, oh, maybe we were wrong about this guy. And then the wheels just came off. He snaps. He has a short fuse. So he snapped in a game in this IBA in 1998. He thought the referee was demeaning him and the other players by saying that they were not good enough to make the NBA and they were just wasting their time. But the end of the story is he jumped on top of the referee's back and put him in a sleeper hold on TV with NBA scouts watching in the crowd. He ended up playing in places like Argentina. He played some in Indonesia, Venezuela, and the Philippines, where he had played a few seasons in the early 2000s prior to the season I met him in 2007 with Alaska. And by then, he had totally turned around his reputation. You know, if after the altercation with the ref, he was thought of as a hothead or maybe this head case guy that was you know, borderline dangerous. By the time he got to Alaska, his nickname was Mr. Everything, the guy who does everything on the court. And he was a guy that everyone wanted on their team. So I think that's how he turned his career around and became one of the most respected guys on the import circuit, especially in Australia and the Philippines and South America, where he spent most of his career.
If a guy who had bounced out of the NBA after a 10-day contract or two were to call you up today and say, hey, Rafe, I got an opportunity to play ball in Manila. Should I go? What would you say?
Oh, I would definitely say that he should go. Players do know, and they expect a little bit of hijinks when they go out to play in the Philippines. And sometimes they're actually very guarded and paranoid about the teams that hire them because they've heard about the league and they've heard that, you know, these guys aren't very loyal to you in the sense that they'll replace you in a minute if they think there's a better guy or if you're not playing up to their sort of unattainable standards. But regardless of that, one, you know, these guys play for a living and the Philippines pays well and they pay on time. So in terms of that, the player should go there. And also, and I think a lot of players who've been in the Philippines and had decent careers there would second this. It's a rare place where you can play outside of the United States and still be part of a really vibrant basketball culture. I mean, I would say even much more vibrant than here in the States where, you know, you're competing with other sports. In the Philippines, there's no other team sport that even is televised. So by going there, you really are going to be playing in front of a country of people who love basketball, who understand the sport, and who will cheer like crazy for you, not only when you play well in a game, but when you walk through a mall. You know, you're walking by McDonald's and people will run out and be like, wow, I do, wow, you're so good. Who wouldn't want a taste of that, you know? And if it doesn't work out, then at least you get paid for it.
Rafe Bartholomew is the author of Pacific Rim's Beer Men Ballin' in Flip-Flops and the Philippines' Unlikely Love Affair with Basketball. It's published by New American Library. And the author joined me from WNYC in New York. Rafe, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Bill, thanks so much. It was really fun.
My conversation with Rafe Bartholomew about his new book, Pacific Rims, will be featured in this week's program. We'll also be updating the Celtics-Lakers series, and Sports Illustrated's Grant Wall will join me from South Africa for a conversation about what's happened and what is about to happen on the soccer fields there. Beyond that, we'll have a story about how folks in various African nations are handling the first World Cup to be hosted on that continent. We'll drop in on the Curtis Cup, the storied competition that pits the best amateur women golfers from the U.S. against their counterparts in Great Britain and Ireland. And we'll hear from some of you via your emails. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.